Hello and welcome to Radical Simple Living Podcast. This is Series 2, Episode 20. And it's actually Take 2 because I just lost what I was talking about before by pressing the wrong button on my laptop here. But that's not a worry to you. It's the end of a long day. I've been busy gardening. I've been busy doing housework. I've been busy walking the dog and bringing in firewood. And there's time now to sit down and talk to you for a little bit about something quite interesting. It's about Abraham Maslow. Now, you may be looking at your device thinking, who's Abraham Maslow? But if you studied psychology at high school, college, university, you will know who he is. He's the man who came up with this hierarchy of needs, Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Is featured in every psychology textbook since there's been psychology textbooks. And I want to talk about that. But first of all, let's just talk a little bit about Abraham Maslow himself. He was of a Jewish Ukrainian family when Ukraine was part of the Russian Empire. And like many Jewish families at the time, his had to flee some of the persecution that went on, and he ended up living in the US, doing very well for himself and becoming an academic in the field of psychology. And to me, he's one of those very interesting academic, all academic. You're an academic yourself, maybe listening, and of course you're a very interesting person. But some academics are more interesting than others. I'm thinking I would put Abraham Maslow along with people like Richard Feynman and Margaret Mead, who, as well as being academic and holding down a professorship and publishing lots of papers and all sorts of things like that, are also very wise human beings. And if you read them, any of those people, you listen to interviews with them or see videos of them where they exist, the wisdom just falls out of them, and everything they say is sort of, you can go away and think, yeah, that's really, really deep, and that's good. So Maslow was somebody of that ilk, I think. And he came up with this hierarchy of needs, which is normally shown as a pyramid. And a pyramid has a wider base than it does a pinnacle, doesn't it? So at the very base of his pyramid, the needs that we all have most are the physiological needs. And this is the need for air, water, food, shelter, sleep, clothing maybe. So all of these basic needs are represented at the base of the pyramid. Without these needs being met, you can't do much else. You can't go on for long without food or water or sleep. In most of the world's climates, you can't go on without shelter and clothing too. So these basic needs are something all humans have. And of course, if I'm looking at my pets that I can see here, they have those needs too. So the basic physiological needs are at the base of the pyramid. Next, we have the idea of safety. And safety also means our personal security. We're not going to be attacked. It might also mean things like having a source of income. It might also mean having enough resources to carry out what we need to do properly, of having health and having somewhere to live. So somewhere to live is difficult from shelter, because a shelter could be a hotel room. Your safety needs might mean, oh, I need a home somewhere, I need a base, I need somewhere to live that I can work from and travel to and travel back to. So those are the safety needs. And above those, on the third level of the triangle, is love and belonging. That's things like friendship, intimacy, sexual intimacy, family, connections, a sense of belonging to a community. All of those things might be love and belonging. And again, some animals have that too. I can see that in my pets, and you can probably see it in yours. Those things are there. Then we come to the penultimate level in this hierarchy, which is esteem. And esteem means that we can talk about the kind of way that other people view us. Self-esteem, status, recognition, strength, freedom, all of these things come into the esteem bit. I would say that sometimes they call these by other names, but that's basically what it means. Esteem is there. And finally, we come to the very pinnacle of Maslow's triangle, which is self-actualization. And that's defined as a desire to become the most that one can be. Reaching your ambitions. If you want to be a taxidermist, it's having reached the pinnacle of taxidermy, where other taxidermists look at you and go, wow. That kind of thing is a very high level of self-actualization, and it's the top of the hierarchy of needs. Now, this podcast is about simple living. You know that if you're a regular listener. If you are a regular listener, it's nice to meet with you again. If you're not, welcome, and I hope you find some of these podcasts of use to you. We don't need to do all of these things. We do need to look at the base of our pyramid before we look at the higher levels. We do need to achieve all those needs for fresh air, water, food, shelter, sheep, sleep and clothing. We don't need sheep. We need sleep. We do need our safety, our personal safety, a way of earning a living, resources and health and property. All of these things are there. Now, maybe what simple living is really, by this definition, is looking at the base of that triangle and making sure we have all those things in place and secure. You cannot get on in your career and reach that self-actualization bit where you become the most that you can be if you're hungry. You can't be the most that you can be if you are thirsty, if you're sleep deprived, if you're cold because you haven't got clothing and you haven't got housing and you haven't got shelter. So two things will strike you at that point. One is a lot of people are trying to build the top layers of their pyramid before they've got a proper base laid down. And we all may be guilty of that to some extent. But also that some people in the world, a lot of the poorer people in the world, never get beyond those levels at the bottom. If they're lucky, they get to friendship and sexual intimacy and family. If they're not, they still wallow around on those lower levels trying to get their basic needs in line. And to live simply is to put yourself in control of those basic things. Say, I need food, I'm going to do what I can to grow my own food. I need shelter, I'm going to do what I can to have a home that I live in and maintain it and look after it myself. So what simple living is, as I see it, as related to Maslow's hierarchy, is that we need to work hard at providing what we need at those lower levels. And then, if we've got time and energy and resources left, we start building those higher levels. Now, this also gets a bit political because a lot of political parties, and I've said before in recent episodes that this is the year of elections all over the world, 2024. Most of the large democracies, not all of them, but most large democracies are going to the polls. And when we vote, we're thinking, maybe unconsciously when we go into the polling booth, but we're thinking about this hierarchy of needs, and we're thinking out how our needs are going to be met. Chances are you're going to be an unhappy voter if you feel that inflation has stopped you being able to afford the food you need, and stopped you being able to pay your rent, and stopped you being able to do all sorts of things. If the national economy or the global economy has stopped you having a job when you find yourself unemployed, that's going to stop you in your tracks on this hierarchy of needs. And of course, if you're an altruistic person, you won't only be thinking about your own hierarchy of needs, but you'll be thinking about the hierarchy needs of your neighbours and other people living on the planet. And you'll be saying any political party that's setting up for election has got to be doing something to consider how these needs are met. So bear in mind that simple living, for the main part, is about work on those lower levels of the hierarchy. It's about work on those levels which is going to get you enough shelter and food and warmth and clothing to be able to lift up your eyes and think about those higher levels and what you might be able to do there. That's the hope. Now, believe it or not, that's not what I want to talk about today. That's interesting because it relates to Maslow, but it also relates to simple living. What I want to talk about is a quote from Maslow. Now, you hear people using this quote all the time, but it's not often accredited to Abraham Maslow. And what it is relates to the fact I was saying he was a very wise man as well as being a clever man. And not, wisdom and cleverness don't always go together. Some people are very clever, but they're not wise. I used to work with a very gifted, clever person once who never knew when to change their T-shirt, and somebody else had to tell them. I had to say to them, look, your T-shirt is a little bit odorous. Perhaps you need to take a shower and change it. You've met people like that. Cleverness doesn't mean you're wise. And there's another word that I like here, which is savvy, because you can be clever and you can be wise, but also being savvy, which is maybe a word that's not used in all parts of the English speaking world, means that you've got some sort of street wisdom and you can look and make adjustments to what's happening and look at what other people are doing around you and use your knowledge and your intellect to be able to weave your way through difficult situations. It's good to be all of those things. What Maslow said was this, and you'll know it. He said, to a man with a big hammer, every problem looks like a nail. To a man with a big hammer, every problem looks like a nail. And instantly you know exactly what he means, don't you? That when we're assessing a situation, we tend to look at what is the thing we've used in the past to deal with situations, and let's use it again now. What is our big hammer? Now, your big hammer may be an aspect of your personality. It may be that you are a big person, and if something happens, you will use your bigness. It's not a very good word, but you know what it is. You will use your bigness to exert power over the situation. If there's a kerfuffle going on and you come into a room, you might use your bigness to say, what's going on here? I used to be a teacher, so I know about that. You might come and say, what's going on here? You take control of the situation. You try and use your physical presence to calm things down, to sort out what the problem is, to look at the issues and deal with it. And some of us may use other ways. Some people use anger as their big hammer, don't they? They use anger to deal with every situation. You know, their luggage has been lost at the airport. They get angry. Their children are misbehaving. They get angry. The waitress or waiter brings you something you didn't order, or they've got something wrong. You get angry. Anger is a big hammer and you can use it. Some of us use our intelligence as a big hammer. You know, if we find things are going wrong, we naturally assume it's because other people involved are not as clever as we are. And with our cleverness, we can come in and solve the problem by just being clever in the right place at the right time. Now, simple living isn't about big hammers. Simple living is about developing strategies to solve problems that don't involve big hammers. The real way, the simple way to solve a problem is to assess it and then look for ways to deal with it. And quite often that doesn't involve you in one big answer, but it involves you in lots of little steps to solve that problem. Okay, I'm going to give you an example here. Let's say you get headaches. Now, I'm not suggesting that you look at this if you suffer from headaches that are part of a medical condition that are causing you a lot of problems and you need doctors to look at this and try and find ways to solve that. I'm talking about if you just wake up with a headache in a few mornings, or you come home from work and you've got a headache, or you develop a headache in the middle of the day. Now, the big hammer way to deal with that headache is to go to the doctor, and the doctor will look up on their computer screen. It's always very disconcerting when a doctor Googles something when you go in. Anyway, they look up on their computer screen and they will say, okay, I'm going to give you a prescription for something that should solve that problem. There it is. The doctor is the man with the big hammer, and the big hammer, which is made by the pharmaceutical industry, is seeing your problem as a nail and whacking it. Here's another person with a headache. Let's give them some of these pharmaceuticals that will cure the headache for them and go away and they won't bother me anymore. Now, the chances are that hammer is going to be a very powerful drug. And maybe you don't need that big hammer to solve your problems. So what your doctor should do, if they have time, which they usually haven't, or you can do yourself, is try and break down the problem of your headache into lots of little bits. And don't look for one big hammer that's going to solve the problem. Look at solving it in little ways. You might say, oh, I'm getting headaches. Perhaps I'm dehydrated. Perhaps I need to drink more water. I'm waking up with headaches a lot. Let's make sure I have a glass of water before I go to bed. You might also think, okay, well, you know, water doesn't rehydrate. Maybe I need an electrolyte. I wake up with a headache. Let's take an electrolyte tablet, which is just salt and sugar, basically, with my water and see if that helps the situation. And you say, yeah, now I think about it, I was, you know, doing a lot of physical activity. I lost some body salt. I lost some water. I dehydrated overnight. That's how I got the headache. So dehydration is a little step to making your headache better. You might say, oh, you know, maybe I was hungry. Maybe I didn't eat the right thing yesterday evening. Perhaps the supper was a little too light. Maybe what I should do is make sure that, you know, I have a glass of milk, I have a cracker or two before I go to bed, keep my blood glucose levels up in the night, and maybe that will stop me waking up with a headache. Maybe you'll say, you know what, I had a lot to drink last night. I had 2 glasses of wine with supper, and maybe that's why I've woken up with a headache. So in future, I'll say no after 1 glass of wine. Maybe you'll say, I ate chocolate last night. And you know, chocolate may be giving the headache. Let's try not to eat chocolate for a few weeks and see if it makes it better. You see what I'm doing? I'm trying to break down the problem. Now, don't work on the assumption that the problem here, which is your headache, just has one cause. It might be when 3 or 4 things come together, that's when you get the headache. Maybe you get a headache when you've had a stressful day. Because you've had a stressful day, you come home and have a couple of glasses of wine with your meal. Perhaps because you've had a stressful day, then you spend too much time telling everybody on social media how stressful your day has been. You spend too long on your laptop or on your phone. You go to bed late. You've had lots of blue light. You don't sleep as well as you should. Maybe you're stressed. Maybe you didn't drink enough water after the wine. Maybe you're dehydrated. All of these things add up to get the headache. So you've got to break that problem down. You've got to look at solutions in small bits. What do? You wake up with a headache, you have some water, you have some electrolyte. You go outside and you get some fresh air. You actually try closing your eyes just for 5 minutes and seeing if that helps. You try maybe doing a few exercises to relieve tension in your neck. You may come up with 10 things that help your headache. 10 little things. One of them doesn't cure your headache. Rubbing your neck doesn't cure your headache. Rubbing your neck as one of several things you do might help. So you're breaking your problem up into little bits and you're doing lots of things that make 10% difference. So if you get headaches, Think of 10 things that help. I can see what you're going to say right away. I can't think of 10 things that help my headache. Well, ask other people what they do when they get a headache. You know, if they all say, oh, I go to my doctor's and he gives me some big pharma pills and I take them, that's not the kind of advice you want. You might find somebody that says, you know, I always find, you know, if I wake up with a headache, I try eating a good breakfast, that helps. There's one of your things. You might find somebody that says, what I do is I try and listen to some really gentle music in the car when I drive to work, and that makes a difference to my head. Or you might say, I drive in silence. All sorts of things. Try them. Try them all. See what makes a difference. Now, if you find 10 things that improve the situation 10%, you've solved the problem entirely. But in reality, that's not going to happen. You might only come up with 7 things that make a 10% difference. And if you do, that doesn't mean you failed. It means your headache is 70% better, or you get 70% less headaches. That's a big achievement. You haven't got a big hammer and whacked the headaches. Don't whack a headache with a big hammer. It's not a good idea. But you get what I mean. You haven't come up with one big solution that's going to solve all these things. You've come up with lots of little things that help. Maybe you haven't got 10 things that all help 10%. Maybe you've got 7 things that all help 10%. And maybe you've come up with only 3 things that help 10%, but another half dozen things that help 6%. All of them help. You need to develop strategies to solve your problem. What other problems can you solve by this little step process that stops you looking for that big hammer to whack a nail in? You might have children that are difficult. You might have children that are difficult getting to sleep. You might have little children that are difficult to potty train. You might have picky eaters among your children that don't like to eat their meals up that you've prepared. All of these are problems that you can solve, not with a big hammer, you know, but you can solve them little by little bit. You know, when I was young, my mother would use some terrible methods to get me to eat because I was a picky eater. It didn't help. If she'd have thought of lots of little things to do, maybe it would have done. You may have problems in your home. You may find, oh, my house gets very messy in the middle of the week when I'm busy. Try and think of little things that could do. You say, you know, my method is you don't get all the washing up sorted by the end of the day. Get a big metal tub and put the washing up in it, and it's tidy. It's off the bench, it's off the tables. It's ready the next morning to go. That's a little thing that helps there. You might say, right, I haven't got time to clean this room entirely, but I'm going to go round. I'm going to have a 10-minute blitz on closing all drawers, picking up things the wrong place and putting them in the right place. If you think of 10 things that make a difference to your messy kitchen in the middle of the week, you've solved the problem. If you think of 7 things that make a 10% difference, your kitchen is 70% tidier as a result of this. It's breaking things up into little bits. And if you have only got the 7 things, keep your eye out. Watch what other people do. Talk to them. Ask them how they solve these problems. They're not going to solve big problems. We're not going to solve the war in Eastern Europe. We're not going to solve the Hamas-Israeli issue. We're not going to solve world inflation this way. We can solve problems like headaches, backaches, indigestion, messy kitchens, unweeded gardens, naughty children. All of these things, we can do little bits to help. Naughty children, you can find 10 things that make a difference. And you can try and improve their behaviour little by little, bit by bit. This may not result in you having perfectly behaved children, but it may result in the children stopping doing some of the things that cause problems. Even if you have 20 or 30% success on that, you're on the road to getting there. You've made a real achievement and you're pushing forward. Now, to adopt this method to almost any problem in your life is fairly simple. How I do it is by having an open piece of paper What I do is have a notepad, much the way I prepare for these podcasts. Actually, I just leave a notepad open, think of a few ideas earlier in the day, jot them down, and there I am. I can talk about them when podcast time comes. You take a pad, write down 10, think of the problem you have, write that at the top, put numbers 1 to 10, you know, over the next day, 2 days, 3 days, every time you pass that piece of paper, have a good look at it and see if you can think of something else to put on the list, and then try and do it. Try and put that into practice, see how it works. You may find that some things don't work. You may find that your headache doesn't help at all by avoiding chocolate, in which case you stop doing that. You think of something else to do. You may find that your untidy kitchen doesn't get helped by tidying it up. I think that's quite unlikely, actually. I think it's quite an easy way to tidy up your kitchen. Just break it down into little processes. Now, if you do this, you will come to solutions. And when you come to those solutions, you can get there. Now, going back to Maslow's hierarchy of needs, remember those are your real needs. If you're going on your journey to try and live a simpler life, if you want to introduce radical simple living in the way you deal with people, the way you deal with your family, the way you deal with yourself, the way you deal with your house, the way you deal with your land, the way you deal with your job, if you want to make all those things simpler, have a look occasionally and ask yourself, why are you doing things? Say, why am I doing this? If you've got a highly manicured lawn in front of your house, ask yourself, which of Maslow's hierarchy of needs does this fit into? You might think it's a physiological need. You absolutely need to have a manicured lawn. But when you look at it, you probably think it's got more to do with right at the top of the pyramid. It's to do with esteem and status and recognition. And you may consider, having looked at that, I will be better off digging up my lawn and growing vegetables. And that way, I'm looking after one of those lower physiological needs to provide food. And that's the best thing I can do, especially if times are difficult. Are times difficult at the moment? Yes. Things are difficult for all of us. Things are difficult financially. Things are difficult for us in terms of worry. The switch on the news, there's 100 things to worry about. We need to worry about ourselves. We need to worry about our family. We need to worry about our needs. We worry if wars are going to spread. We worry if the cost of war is going to make a big difference to all the other things, which as societies we need to do. If governments have got to spend more money preparing for wars, that's less money for education, that's less money for environmental causes, that's less money for almost everything. So we have reached this point in society where we need to examine those lower levels of the pyramids, our basic needs. And if there's a problem that's coming up that's stopping you reaching those basic needs, try that non-hammer use, non-hammer nail solutions to problems. And I hope it helps. Okay, now, these podcasts now, there's, I think, 40 podcasts in series one. There's 20 podcasts in series two. So that means 60 issues that I've dealt with. If you do have issues, look back over the series and see if there's something else that might help you. I don't get to spend a lot of time on social media. I'm sorry to all those people I know on social media. That's why you don't see much of me. If you're on social media and you think you know somebody that might be interested in these podcasts, please let them know about it and publicise it. I will be very grateful. And remember, if ever you need to get in contact with me, you can do it through social media or you can email me if you like, and you will find me at radicalsimpleliving@gmail.com. radicalsimpleliving@gmail.com. And every now and then I go and answer any questions I can there. If I take a little while to get back to you, it's probably not because I'm deluged with emails. It's probably I've forgotten to look for a while. So don't worry about that. Okay, it's been nice sharing this time with you today. And my pets have all been very well behaved, haven't they? And I hope to talk to you again very, very soon and welcome you to my homestead. Thank you for being here. And whatever you're doing, do it simply and look for those little ways to solve problems. Okay, bye for now.